In the latest episode of My Imaginary University, I speak to Douglas Blackstock, former chief executive of the Quality Assurance Agency, about his idea for a novel and very non-traditional kind of university. His extremely niche institution, provisionally named the European University for Regulation of Organisations, or EURO, is handily located in Luton, close to some excellent transport links. The core idea behind this new university is that it provides courses at all levels for both regulators and the regulated. And if Harvard are offering programs in this area, then why not? The two different groups study in two different buildings, and segregation is rigorously maintained by means of a linking corridor and a revolving door. Being located close to Luton Airport is key for international student recruitment, but also for short course provision in partnership with the Premier Inn. Douglas is pretty confident about demand, seeing regulation as always having a consistent market, a bit like funeral directors, and is aiming to ensure genuine participation from students, both regulators and regulated, in dealing with every aspect of the university's own operations, from higher education regulation to student codes of discipline. Finally, Douglas bemoans the lack of a huge donor to support his vision, but nevertheless comes up with a range of potential university anthems. It's a great episode, and I really hope you enjoy it. Right, well, welcome everyone to the latest edition of My Imaginary University, the exciting podcast in which we give a leading sector figure the opportunity to create their very own fictional university. So as I always say, it's a bit like Desert Island Discs without the desert, the island, the discs, or indeed the books and the celebrities. However, we do have someone relatively notable who's the former chief executive of the Quality Assurance Agency in the UK, but now sector figure at large, Douglas Blackstock. Welcome, Douglas.
Thank you, Paul. Good to speak to you today. And I'm interested in how you respond to my plans and my ideas. Really a bit of kite flying here, but you never know, there could be legs in this.
Well, you've...
If you can get legs on a kite, that is.
Legs on a kite. Well, I mean, you know, you've seen huge swathes of our sector in the UK and overseas, right? So you've seen all kinds of institution. So I'm imagining you've got, you know, lots of creative ideas about how you could create a very novel kind of university. But I'm really interested to hear what kind of thing you've got in mind. I'm imagining it's not going to be, you know, just another Oxford or Cambridge.
No. I think the key thing is that this would be a university of success. You know, from failure we do grow. And largely social science based to reflect the government's current demands for new skills, although they don't know that that's actually the skills they need. And I wanted to make sure it wouldn't be classified as offering Mickey Mouse degrees. But I've got to be careful. We don't want to infringe on the Disney University. Of course, for you and I, it doesn't really matter. The idea is to have something that's utterly modern, kind of plan to break with all the traditions, a real shot in the eye for the establishment, but that not tied down to anything in particular, everywhere and anywhere, you know, just sort of agile, if you like. But of course, starting from scratch, we'll need to draw on faculty and research from existing providers. I hope they don't put any barriers up there, and maybe even get a validation agreement or some such a thing. We might even rent some premises. The plan originally, it seems quite niche, a bit of a monotechnic. If you, I don't know if you've heard of those, you know, you're in a big multidisciplinary university, but drawn on a wide range of academic disciplines. It's sort of half of going back to where I did my degree in public administration, grand title, but actually it was a bit of social policy, a bit of economics, a bit of statistics, a bit of computing. Drawn on all those disciplines, but in a broad area. So here's the thing, right? And I'm flying a kite with you, and I hope that you'll give me honest feedback, because I might want you to get involved with this. So here's the thing. I've spent the last 20 years in quite a narrow field. But once I get out of the basement of counting the paper clips in QAA and became the chief executive, I realised there's a whole world of people out there like me. I'm testing the water with you and see what you think of this. It's a nascent idea, but I think you know about all this stuff. You know, I really should have got you to sign an NDA. I've got a I've got a project title for this, top secret. It's called Project Dangerous Medicine, in honour of you, really. And I've gone the way, I've started with quite niche, but I'm trying to get beyond minor ambitions. You know, I don't want to be the top 10 in South Lanarkshire, or top 5 in the South Midlands, or even the top 3 in South Lancashire. I'm thinking Europe and worldwide in this field. And I'm aiming at big plans over time. We might have to start small, because there is one barrier on the way. I've got no money. But to create what I would call, it's, I think it's an interesting title, the European University for Regulation of Organisations, or the Euro. It's, you know, it's quite a novel idea. I'm not sure how it will land in the UK with that title. But, you know, the UK loves regulation, and the Europeans love it even more. So this is the sort of idea. I've been thinking about location. If it's in the UK, it needs to be easy to get to from Westminster, because that's where the regulators spend all the time. Maybe somewhere off the Central Line, preferably the Elizabeth Line, because it's a bit better. But then I thought, you know, if I'm going to attract an international audience, which I think it could do, then I've got a map of all the airports in the UK. And then I've hitched on this idea. I think there may be a provider there I could lean on. But Luton. It's got an easy jet, Jet 2, you've got Wizz Air and Ryanair, all fly out of there. It's all over the interesting parts of Europe, and it's got a fast train line into St Pancras, which is nearly a mile or two from Westminster. So I'm thinking that's a nice location. I think we'll start with a blend of programmes right through to Masters eventually, maybe even start with Masters and work our way down. Maybe if we can get in the apprenticeship markets. I don't know if the people I'm going for are pay the apprenticeship levy and can access it, but it's worth a try. So my market here is very niche, as I said. It's the regulators and the regulated. And I need to make sure there's no conflict in there. So here's the thing. You're thinking, that's really niche, isn't it?
I am thinking that's really niche.
It's really niche. But, you know, if you look at the potential scope of the market, I mean, I've looked at an article here, direct regulation of estate agents to take next steps towards legislation. You know, even estate agents might be subject to this stuff. So if you look around, there's regulators everywhere. So look, there's these handy government web pages, UK regulated professions and the regulators. There's hundreds of them employing thousands of people, maybe 30,000 folks who, to be honest, right, got a humanities degree and they're looking for something to do, and they got a job in a regulator. So if you just go on that,
that is a very cynical view of the world. Nevertheless, you've got to go with your market, haven't you?
Well, that's what I think. I mean, there's probably a few statisticians, a few data analysts, data engineers, these people. I'm just going broad brush at the moment to test it out. So just look at this, right? So there's five regulators in the field of education, right, and a dozen professions. There's 7-8 healthcare regulators, about 40 professions. There's in legal, there's half a dozen, I think 7 of those, with about 10 when you add in UK variations. There's professional and business regulators to count. There's just so many, you can't count them, but only for 6 professions. I mean, it must be a real bun fight in the world of accountancy. Social care, there's 4 of those, but 30 professions busy, with keeping them busy. Transport, about half a dozen, again, 30 professions. And then there's the brilliant category, I love it, other. Now, that's about the social sciences in your university, isn't it? Just loads of them, from agriculture analysts, farriers, through to vehicle immobilizers, right? So you start with the regulators, which maybe there's 30,000 people, maybe a few hundred a year, but there are hundreds of thousands of people getting regulated. And they need to know about it. So I'm just thinking it might be a bit niche. That's why maybe you could start with the short course stuff.
So, I mean, I can absolutely see, right, that if you are working anywhere in regulation, actually there's a really good opportunity to enhance your skills, to potentially get promoted, to move up from, as you say, the agricultural regulator to the vehicle immobiliser regulator, because who wouldn't want to progress that way? So a kind of professional, you know, and then leading to a master's. I mean, I can see research blossoming in this area, right? Because it is such a huge area and it is genuinely under-researched as well, but a real powerful interest to government. So I absolutely get all that. I think the it's difficult to see it as a kind of full time career option route for your 18-year-olds, though, isn't it?
Well, that's where I'm toying with the idea of maybe there might be an apprentice regulator.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, as I said, I've got no money, so I've got to start somewhere, and I've got to start small. So it may be the short course, professional development, maybe a 1-year transition from an undergraduate to postgraduate to give you the skills. And I've got some ideas around how those programs. I've been looking. So there actually is a web page from the government called Find a Regulated Qualification. There's loads of them. I think you deliver a few yourself. But there is, to be fair, I've got some competition. Regulation compliance MSc at Queen Mary. That is on the central line, so handy for the regulators. There's a short course on financial services and markets regulation. There's a diploma in world customs and compliance. And there's a 3-trade training course on European Union pharmaceutical regulations. But it doesn't really get you into the depths if you want to make this your lifetime career. So by the way, there's even one. I mean, this is where I actually got the idea from. Because one of my colleagues, I looked at it myself and one of my colleagues went on it. You might have heard of Harvard. Well, they've got a week-long program on for regulatory and enforcement agencies. So if the top boards are doing it, you know, they're quite famous, Harvard. So I'm thinking maybe I could get in the back, maybe we get in the coattails of that.
But they're presumably charging an arm and a leg for that kind of thing. But, right, well, okay.
So you can go online for a week program. Yeah.
But okay, so if I am the, you know, the potato licensing board or whatever it is, right, and I'm thinking actually I want a couple of these people in my senior team to get some specific regulatory qualifications. So what do they get from doing the diploma or the master's or the tailored MBA in regulation or whatever it might be from this university?
Yeah, well that's the interesting part, because I think you hit on something there. This is where I don't know where to start. This is why I needed your advice, really. Is do you start from the bottom up with an undergraduate program that takes you there, or do you start from the top down with a really good research unit that gives you the content to deliver to top class professionals, and then you build a respect to attract the entry level people? I sort of planned out a range of things, you know. I mean, if you were talking about the foundation level, and by the way, I think it's a great idea to have a foundation year in this, you know, you've already got on that government list, you've got all the faculties already, healthcare, education, business, other, you know, loads of, you can structure all around that, or at least you can structure your content. So, I mean, in the foundations, you could start with, the foundations of regulation. This could be a short course for anybody at any level, and you could scale up with in-depth content. But, you know, how to demonstrate you know everything about an industry you've never worked in. The art of confusion. Speaking on behalf of the consumer without consulting them. Bearing the burden and just getting on with it is another one. How to recognise the dangerous medicine. You know how you recognise your medicine. How to avoid casual conversation. And that's topped up with an extra course, an optional course on life without friends.
But no, I genuinely think there's something in this, right? Because I personally, I would start with the master's provision, because actually you've got a ready market. I think it takes a little bit of time to persuade people that regulation is the future for them, right? And I agree with you that actually apprenticeships are a really good option, but also I think a straight undergraduate degree in because you could do your UK regulation, you could do specific English, but actually European regulation as well, and also your niche, your healthcare, your social services, whatever it might be. I think there are, and you know, you can have different pathways. I think it's a winner. I have to say, I'm already getting excited. Who wouldn't want to pursue such a career?
You might want to deliver a module for me.
Oh, at least.
I've been listening to your other stuff, earlier casts, and you know, I mean, like Smita Jamdar, she'd be a cracker for delivering the programme on the legal aspects of regulation.
I think she'd be a good shout for university secretary myself.
Now, in one of my research areas, I mean, you had Craig Mahoney. Craig's a psychologist by background. I mean, I think there's some research to be done on the psychological impact of regulation on the regulated. Does this all add up? And is another area, as in, that can come to the data actually making sense or making up the numbers, which is a great art if you want to tell people what you've already decided to do. I mean, I need to walk before I can run. So the bringing together of that programme is interesting. You see, but this is where the masters and the short course thing might work. So let's envisage a decided little headquarters near Luton Airport, you know, fast line into St Pancras, Wizz Air, yeah. Ryanair, right? And envisage probably a physical premises of two buildings. One for the regulator to study and one for the regulator. Got to avoid conflicts of interest.
Of course, and presumably some kind of wall with an oriental
field. Well, no, but between. I think we could have a corridor between the two with a revolving door, because it's quite, you know, it's quite a feature of them. but then this is where it can get attractive. So you might not have a programme I've looked at. It's about 4,500 online. It's about 12,000 if you go to Boston, Cambridge, sorry, to Cambridge, Massachusetts, to study it. But it's a long way, long flights and all that. Yeah. Whereas based at Luton Airport, I've just been down and visited the higher education regulator in Malta. They've got loads of regulation down there. You could pop off a week's visit to study regulation in a different country. You could become an international regulator. This opens up all sorts of possibilities just to learn, bring experience in, and show that you've learned a lot by having a nice little break while you've been away.
Okay, right. So you've got this distinctive campus in Luton, right? And we're assuming that the University of
Luton's great, by the way. It's just such a prime location. It's also in the M1, by the way, for people who want to come.
And indeed all the high spots of Luton as a city itself. So, okay, right. In terms of the delivery, then, are we envisaging two buildings, once the regulator, once the regular. But how big? I mean, are we talking, physical presence for your undergraduate and your postgraduate? I mean, is it, a lot of it distance learning or online learning? Or will you have people there for, most of the calendar year?
Well, that brings in a lot of cost, doesn't it? If you go into that physical premises with lots of people coming. I think I would envisage, if you're doing the short courses, short residential, probably somewhere near the Premier Inn, the airport.
Well, the airport, yeah, because you can use the facilities there. Yeah, good one. Yeah.
So that's for your short courses. That would work quite well until you're really going. So probably quite small until you get a teaching building up with some seminar rooms and classrooms and stuff like that. But then the masters, I think people would probably want to do a blend of catching up with, their homework and all that, doing some online, particularly, to be fair, during the pandemic, we learned a lot that you can get. I mean, the guy at Harvard might deliver a lecture for me, give him $500 and he'd do it online, saves the airfare and all that sort of stuff. You can bring in experts, but then the one thing is that your networking is really important in this business. If you want to move between regulators, getting to know the people who are everywhere and anywhere, the people you might want to recruit. And as we test through that, get the space start to be built for that first cohort of maybe start quite small, maybe not be too ambitious, of 30 to 50 first year intake on a site. Try and get an agreement with a local university where they can use their students' union, because people want a bit of that experience sometimes. And just gradually move up. But if I could get into that apprenticeship game. I don't know who would. I guess maybe there is an apprenticeship in regulation already approved. I haven't looked that hard. The idea of people maybe learning in the workplace. I would try and reach out to all the regulators saying, do you want a talent spot? Get some talented young people to come in for a couple of weeks unpaid, paying tuition fees anyway.
And presumably it'd be classic, work placement stuff. Have a year at a regulator as well on a 4-year degree, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well. By the way, I mentioned all the professional regulators. I never get anywhere near Ofcom, Ofwat, Ofgem, the pensions regulator. I mean, they've got a lot of influence. Them, there's just a whole range of these people. So, can you imagine you did 6 months on campus, 6 months in Ofsted, and so let's say you wanted to go into education, 6 months in campus, 6 months in ESFA, 6 months on campus, 6 months in Ofsted. Back in the campus, maybe the Office for Students is in the other regulators, it's not in the professional ones. There's bunches there then. If you're interested in utilities, you've got Ofgem and Ofwat and Ofcom. This was part of my idea about giving everybody a basic foundation. It's almost a bit like a Scottish degree, isn't it? You do a very broad brush in the first year, and then you build up and decide if you want to specialise or have a couple of tracks you want to go down: utilities, nuclear, pensions, farriers.
So, farriers. Yeah. So, in terms of the ethos, right, of this university, the kind of value system, right? Because I think this is really important, because in terms of what you're aiming to do in developing the next generation of regulators and supporting those who are the most regulated, as it were, are you essentially encouraging them to develop an approach to regulation which is essentially a kind of let's get more of it in there, guys, we need to be doing more, we need to be doing better, and we need to create more regulation to keep this country in that highly regulated position it is?
Well, you see, that it's interesting. It would be great if there was more people, because then there's more potential students, but but you've got to build the reputation of and the expertise on what's good. The one thing I'd say is that for those that are regulated, that we wish it would all go away. I mean, you know, regulators are like funeral directors. They're never going to die out. There's always going to be a role. Always going to be a role for them, isn't there?
You know, absolutely. Like, absolutely.
We mentioned the US. I mean, why is Harvard running that program? Because despite everybody thinks, America's hugely regulated. You know, I've been travel Europe a lot, just been in the Middle East and Africa. There's regulars everywhere. Now, this is the other thing. There's a potential we get this right. It's only me at the moment sitting in the upstairs bedroom coming up with this stuff. But if we get this right, it could be like the Sandhurst of regulation. We could attract the top people from all over the world to come and learn the bit. And then that's soft power for the UK. If everybody mimics our systems, a bit like QA systems are mimicked all around the world, then it's easier to export for the UK.
Yeah, to be the internationally recognised centre for regulation, brackets good or bad, that's a real ambition, isn't it?
We've got the experience, the bad, to learn how to get better, haven't we?
Mm.
And we can try some madcap ideas. But ideally, what we could do is, what do they call it, a regulatory sandbox. Maybe, get some universities or some colleges and some a couple of companies to volunteer for our latest idea to see if it works or not. I mean, if it works, it's brilliant. If it doesn't work, it's their fault because they've not understood the regulations.
I think this is an absolute winner, right? There's a challenge, though, that is bothering me slightly, right? And this comes back to your, divide between the regulator and the regulator, because, of course, the institution itself is subject to regulation, right? So what happens when, the university has to engage with the regulators that it's dealing with, right? So, for example, the Office for Students, but also the other agencies as well. So how does that work? Is it a great opportunity to send your brightest students up in front of them?
Well, half of me thinks, how can I avoid it? But that wouldn't really fit with the ethos of the institution, would it? I think we need to go in with the spirit of it and get together a good plan and engage early, and maybe we get the contract for the Office for Students' Apprentices.
It's not a sandbox, but it's a great learning opportunity for everyone involved in the organisation. So you'd want to make sure that everyone had the opportunity to see what was going on with those, be they inspections, be they assessments of all written and online work that students have produced over the past 5 years. So I think you'd want everyone to see what it's like in reality, wouldn't you?
I would, and it'd be a great project for the students to help write the first lot of students to write the self-evaluation or whatever they call it, the application form.
There is a sense in which if you can make it in Luton, you'll make it anywhere, right? So, if you're able to launch in Luton, then actually the world's your oyster, isn't it?
Well, Bedfordshire's a very good university, done really well, come a long way. It's not inhibited the football team. They're doing well. There's the other thing. We know that if you want to get international students, having a good football team is very attractive.
Well, I thought what you're going to say is another area of specialism potentially for the university, because sport regulation, team,
football regulation,
football
burgeoning.
Yeah. Well, Manchester City will be gobbling up you know, regulatory experts, weren't they?
Well, this is the thing is, a lot of people think it will just, they put their head in the sand, not the sandbox, but they just put their head in the sand, and this stuff's just going to come at you. So you're as well having, if every company and every organization just had one trained person, one skilled person, I mean, you never know, there might be room to tie up with the Chartered Governance Institute, you know, all these people, all their members, loads of people in the legal sector could do with an add-on qualification.
So we've got lots of distinctive features of what I have to say is sounding like an increasingly viable proposition, right? Are there any other aspects to this that you you think it's important that you you push out there to start with, to make it, you know, an even more attractive proposition?
I'm a great believer in let the students put these things together themselves if we give them the facilities. A lot, you know, I know the it might even be a tie-up of supporting them. A lot of them will be gamers, you know, online gaming. The young people do different things these days. Of course, we're not only looking for young people. Yep. We're looking for experienced people who want to make a mid-year career change. Because let's be honest, regulators get opened and they shut, and they open and they shut. And people, they often, I mean, particularly in Coventry, you'll be familiar in Coventry, in the education sector, a regulator gets shut, everybody gets made redundant, then they're all re-employed in the new regulator. But there's a lot of change management going on here.
One of the joys of it being at this stage fictional, right? But you know, may it happen, is that you are, you know, you're in the principal position here, but you're allowed to stop things, right? You know, and you know, government wants us to prevent us banning things, but you can ban stuff, right? So are the things that, if you know, you establish this university, and you know, let's assume for the sake of argument, you are vice chancellor, what are you banning?
You're drawing me into all this woke stuff, aren't you? I'm a bit worried about getting cancelled on all this stuff. But I think this is where I wouldn't go strictly for a ban, but there'd need to be strict controls in moving between the two buildings. And strict controls with becoming friends with people who you might end up regulating. You know, you don't want any of that. Avoiding the social chit-chat. Dealing with those awkward moments when you don't want to speak to people. I think what I would like to do, because this is my background, I'd like to sit down with the students and work with them on what should our ground rules be, what should our principles be. We're a principles-based institution, we'll set all that out and think about what's the risk of us banning anything or allowing anything. You know, there's a lot of work to be done, and that'd be great practical development. I mean, it could save me a fortune. Instead of buying consultants, get the students to help me write the regulations.
I agree. Just coming back to this issue of stopping people mixing, right? Or at least being slightly restricted. So your two buildings, right? Have you got different catering facilities in each of the buildings? Or is it that, you know, they've got to go to different parts of Luton Airport? You know, one's going to go to departures, one's going to go arrivals in order to get their sandwiches or whatever.
You've given me a good idea there, because putting on catering is expensive. I mean, the regulators, they'll be quite frugal. They'll have a glass of water and bring their own sandwiches. The regulator, they want slap up meals with wine and stuff like that. I think that's one of those things that. As long as you have a dividing line down, you go for one space and one kitchen with a wall between them, you know, stop them mixing. But again, you could have a system where they could show a pass to go through and have you know, the one thing you could do, I think, with the setup I'm envisaging, is you could allow each side to practice on the other.
Right.
You know, those that want to be regulators, who may become regulated later in life, could do the hardcore stuff, you know. Where they're regulated, the people from who want to work in the regulated, and then they could practice telling their story, writing their appeals, having their appeals ignored. But you know, all that sort of stuff it could be really, really handy. There'd be a lot of experiential learning here.
And as you said, I think you mentioned earlier, I mean, the opportunity for visiting speakers from all parts of the regulated and the regulating sectors will be enormous, right? I mean, you'll get the big cheeses from Ofqual and from, you know, QAA and, you know, ICO and all the rest of it, won't you?
My experience is, although most of us are very shy, we quite like to get on a platform. I think you know, I think if you get this right, and I get the balance right and from the early days, you know, I said it earlier, that this idea that, that people can begin to have their ideas influence the future of regulation, and also maybe begin to think about who, what are sort of talent skills they want developed through for their organisations. Because I'm sure everybody's committed to the success of the system of the systems of regulation, even where there's duplication. You know, I mean, you've probably got 100 regulators visit the university. That's a great market for me. So I'd need to do a bit of research about, the problem is that most of the people who get top of the regulators have probably gone to two universities, you know, and they might not be interested in me. But I need to find some really notable people who be a chancellor. You might fancy that yourself, I don't know. You might even be my vice chancellor. You're an expert in this stuff. I think it's a problem. The biggest barrier, I mean, there's far too many barriers to opening up new providers in this country, and the toughest one is not having any money. If we could just target the right top person in government who's in charge of all regulation, the supremo, if you like, of the regulators, it's in the government's interest for this to work properly. Or maybe it's not, because then, see, if it works properly, there's nobody to blame.
Other than the government itself. It's a conundrum, but there are many such paradoxes in the world of regulation, aren't they? And I don't think you should let that trouble us at all. Right, finally, then let me just ask you. You know, every university has to have a song, and you know, in US university they call it a fight song or whatever. But so, which song is this?
This is where I spent the most effort, Paul.
Right. Okay. Go on then.
So I thought about. I originally thought about Things Can Only Get Better, but I think someone used that in the late 90s.
Yeah, I thought
Good Morning Britain, because, you know, it's a deceptive cheery anthem for the 80s, actually sung by one of my old neighbours, Roddy Frame, but actually about the country going to the rot. So
yeah,
that doesn't work.
I remember that one.
And then I remember there's a Southern Californian band, The Regulators, and they play a sort of honky-tonk blues-infused good time boogie tunes, started by harmonic layers of gut-busting guitars. Apparently the best riding band since ZZ Top, and that ruled them out right away. There's a rap song, The Regulator, but I didn't, you know, the lyrics, I'd be cancelled, right? And then there's a great one, I think they're a Dutch ska band, and I can try and play it for you if you want, but you'll probably get a YouTube advert. It's called Why. And I just think that's a great anthem for a regulator. It's on the Reggae Dynamite EP from Gravity Records, if you want to get it. Then there's a great one. It's not great. It's a terrible song, but it's very apt. It's by a punk band from 1982 called Bad Brains. It's called The Regulator. It's you tell me what to say and when to say it. You tell me what to do and how to do it. And if I ask you why, you'll arrest me. And if I call you a liar, you'll detest me. You control what I'll be. You control who I see. And if I let you, you'll control me. You're the man who owns all the keys to the stores. You're the man who always wants so much more. Now, we need to change the gender there. But you're the regulator. That's the chorus. You're the regulator. I think it's great.
That's prescient, isn't it? I think we need to get that bang back together and get them to re-record it for the new generation. That's outstanding.
I can play that for you, but it really is bad. But it might playing this.
Don't, you better not play it, because what will happen is that, no, don't play it, right? Because
and then if you like the idea of the why, there is a song by the Lightning Seeds, why.
Oh, right, is it?
Yeah, if you try. Look, this is quite apt, you know, for a regulator. If you try, you will find what you need. Do you like what you see when you find what you need? This just sums it up, doesn't it?
Perfect. Right, that's absolutely fantastic. Douglas, on that note, we need to stop. I couldn't be more excited by this new regulation university, which needs a better name, but it will all work through. So once you've got the donor in place, then I'm very up for making it happen.
Looking forward to you delivering the courses and your investment.
I do hope you enjoyed this edition of My Imaginary University. There should be more episodes along soon. In the meantime, you might like to listen to the equally higher education focused podcast, University Registrars Talking About Stuff, in which I talk to senior university leaders, most of them registrars or equivalent, about their careers and various bits of HE stuff.
Just Google it to find many interesting episodes to listen to.